Good morning, everyone. Can you hear me in the back at this level?
Yeah.
Okay. Usually I have a microphone. So, God. Is everybody warm enough? So, as Tokyu said in his very beautiful talk yesterday, we're now approaching the home stretch, the end of this Ango period, where we've been practicing, cultivating peaceful dwelling. And overall, throughout the month, it sort of has seemed to me that this Ango period has collectively been one of the most peaceful I can remember. And, you know, I've been thinking about why this might be, and, you know, it came to me that probably a good part of it is due to the study text, actually, that we've been working with this period, along with the barometric pressure. But there really has seemed, from what I can see, to be a much greater, just direct enjoyment and appreciation of what is just the heart of our practice, our sitting. You know, people just, I mean, haven't been sensing the same feeling of, it's such a struggle to just go do it, and, you know, that it's this question of fierce discipline, you know. It's just like, it's sort of been this feeling of, oh, God, now it's time to go sit. We can just go sit. And that's not always the case during session. And as you've been hearing throughout the month from everyone, that this text, Cultivating the Empty Field, is kind of the foundational practice manual for Shikin Taza, or the form of meditation, the form of Zazen that we practice. And just my feeling is that these practice instructions are actually helping. Sometimes it is actually good to read the instructions, and it's not something that I usually do, but this book, you know, reading the instruction, the practice instructions, has actually been medicinal. And I think that they are getting us to relax a little bit more, to just lay down some of our burdens and just roam a little more freely in this great empty pasture. And I think the primary burden many of us are laying down is that of ourselves. To just lay down the heavy burden of the self that we carry around and so tenaciously hold on to, the one we so fiercely believe we need to be and to protect. And again, as Tokyu alluded to yesterday, to simply begin to practice resting in who we truly are. Again and again, in all manner of ways. Perhaps rinsed away by this morning soft breeze and the rustling of the falling leaves. This morning's Zazen period was just kind of breathtaking. It's amazing how, you know, this happens every day, but Do we hear it? Do I ever hear it? So, as fates would have it, Tokio actually ended up going into, quite movingly, a lot of the same themes that I was planning to explore, which is not surprising because we've been, I think, swimming and splashing around in the same muddy water this past few weeks. The steamy lotus pond that is the Grail. But notice, like on all the weeks of Angos, even if when we're not coming from the same place, a lot of the speakers end up carrying similar themes. And, you know, it reminds us that actually we are, in fact, different branches of the same family tree, that everyone in this room is part of this family tree. So I wasn't planning to, because somehow it seemed too much on type, but I ended up in the backward step in the upright cauldron. And it just is what pulled me in at the moment. I was finally about to write. And the beginning passages of it go, it's just, well, I guess each of the little verses has everything in them. But it says, "With the depths clear, utterly silent, thoroughly illuminate the source, empty and spirited, vast and bright." So, you know, it takes time. It takes actually a lifetime of time. But as we consistently, and I think consistently is the operative word here, give ourselves the gift of silence, of stillness, which is the upright cauldron of our meditation practice, we find the inner landscape transforms, and actually it transforms quite radically over time. And wherever we are in this process, in this upright cauldron, I think we begin to view ourselves and so the world differently. And it might be just the first time we sat down to sit for 20 minutes. That's pretty wild, the first time we do that. A lot can happen in the first 20 minutes. It's like, whoa, is this in there? So in the quiet space of our silent introspection, taking the backward step, even if it's only for a moment, we can get a taste of experiencing the landscape that's not yet muddied with all of our ideas and our definitions, our explanations, opinions, just ongoing chattering, accusing voices. Perhaps we find a moment of just awareness, just illumination. And we find that here, just for those few moments, empty of all the myriad ideas that were maybe just 3 seconds ago so solid, just grabbing us by the neck, choking us, there's mysteriously much more room. There's room to move around in. The next line, Hongzhi says, "Even though you have lucidly scrutinized your image and no shadow or echo meets it, searching throughout, you see that you have still distinguished between the merits of 100 undertakings." So we have those moments with just perhaps that just pure spaciousness, but chances are as we shift our gaze inward and we start really roaming around, we may well find ourselves still ranking ourselves, still taking our measure. How we and everyone around us did or didn't do, maybe how well we taught, how we rang a bell, how we handled an awkward situation, a relationship, etc., and so on. So this spaciousness gives us permission to really look around. And chances are that we will keep meeting and begin to get quite familiar with voices that are particular to us. I think for many of us, that's that internal judge, the one always at the ready, always on call for duty to distinguish the merits and values of our 100 ongoing undertakings. And when we sit down, we may find that there's pretty much nothing we do that this voice doesn't find worth distinguishing between, measuring, judging. The text then says, "Then you must take the backward step and directly reach the middle of the circle from where the light issues forth. Outstanding and independent, still you must abandon pretext for merit. Carefully discern that naming engenders beings and that these rise and fall with intricacy." So, you know, as we start to notice this often very subtle level of naming, ranking, analyzing, that normally we don't even have any consciousness is going on, even though it's happening all the time. Creating pretexts for merit, reasons for giving ourselves value, whatever you want to call it, we can actually then take the backward step even further and drop even more when we notice. And in this noticing, we can drop even these almost indiscernible ideas of ourselves, drop the analysis, and actually let go of it all. Stepping back in pure awareness are not two, and we are suddenly in the middle of the circle, becoming the stillness, the silence, no longer looking for it. We simply are there. And there's no longer anyone to know anything. In this place of just complete presence, of complete absorption, there is really just a way in which all of these things, all the pretexts, the reasons, the machinations towards merit fall away. Because in a way they have no job anymore. Because we are gone. In this place there's no one to protect. So empty of their need for being, as ourself as we know it, is gone. And in this dimension where nothing is known, even if only for a moment, we can then, from that place, begin to carefully discern how this activity of naming actually manifests, because we don't stay in the middle of the circle. But from this other dimension, as a reference point, almost, if you will, we can actually begin to see the ways in which we create our reality as we know it, as we see it, as we believe it to be. Because as we categorize, name, analyze, measure things, we are actually simultaneously creating them, giving them substance. So if we continue in this steady awareness as we see this whole panoply arise and take form, if we stay with it, we can also see how this all begins to fall or dissolve. As it arises, it does also fall, just like the smoke from burning incense, if we stay with this open gaze and don't punch the microphone, if we don't grab on. Illuminating the source, or insubstantiality, is actually visceral. It's not an idea. And this insubstantiality, of the self, has the power to liberate us from and have compassion for our demons, for those who have hurt us, and for those we want to hurt. In this space, we're just all together in the same relational field. And this porous pasture, as Tokyo said, this soft, porous pasture is also very fertile ground. And it's definitely the place I have found forgiveness is born. When the certitude and the fixity of who I am lays down and drops, it's like, who is right? Who is wrong? Who is even the other? And in that space, grace somehow begins to manifest. It's not manufactured. So the capacity to see our hurts and wounds, our demons, without all of the attachment to the stories is the gift of meditation. It's not how we usually work with this stuff. And as we open to our own wounds, I think we can really begin to see all the many hurts and harms that we've done and continuously do to others, to those we don't know, probably mostly to those closest to us, and really everyone in between. And again, you know, as Toki said, the field gets very, very real and opens up even further as we begin to look honestly at this. Like, wow, did I really do that? Did I really completely shut this person down because I didn't want to hear what they had to say? Because they were threatening, because I just didn't like them. Did I really blame and throw this other person under the bus because I didn't want to look stupid? Just really seeing into all of who we are and what we're capable of. And being honest that we're not, and probably never will be, who we'd like to be or think we should be. Just really being honest with this and going there can also bring us into the circle of wonder, because it is through not already knowing who we are that we become one with ourselves. That questioning, what is going on here? Who am I? Never stop inquiring this. And I feel like I have to add that it's also a good idea to make amends along with many of the times we've seen, you know, the harm we've caused. It's not always just enough for us to see it and make our own little peace with it. It's a first step. So as I get older and I just continue practicing, I've found that my understanding of forgiveness in a way gets less as my appreciation for it, and in a way I would say reverence for it, actually expands. Roaming in the empty field, the field of really infinite relationship, isn't possible without it. And I now see it actually as probably one of the most powerful aspects of this process of purifying, grinding down, curing, and brushing away the tendencies and conditioning we have formed into parent habits that Hongzhi speaks about in the very first opening verse of the text. You know, it can actually feel like an internal shower as we wash away old, no longer necessary resentments and angers. So, you know, just again, over time, and it really is over time, you know, all the many hurts and harms that have been done to us begin to reveal themselves. Wounds that we've kept under wraps, under control. I think largely because we fear the loss of this, you know, what is ultimately a precarious sense of ourselves. And it's really scary to think of ourselves as hurt, as one who can be hurt and vulnerable. Pretty much anything other than that is preferable. I find often if I've been violated in some way, I have to forgive myself for somehow letting that happen. It's not always about forgiving the other person. Even this forgiveness thing is very, I think, complex. But again, it's really almost impossible to believe that actually, oh yes, I actually do need to go back and feel that. It's not enough to be like, oh, this is really upsetting. I feel really upset about this. It's like, what is that? You know, that's the entry point. Like, what is this upsetness? So as we let ourselves be to arise and dissolve in this empty field of our zazen, the veils of protection just do slowly begin to drop away, and we do start to see all the many shames that have cut the grooves or ruts that we unconsciously fall into and tread again and again and again and again. And perhaps the grooves were formed by never having been seen, or having been violated when we were seen, or from being controlled through guilt, through relentless critique, or even through violence. These arrows that are often not obvious or visible, they find their marks and they go deep. So, you know, again, while they're not easy to see, when we sense them, and we may sense them in different, very different kinds of ways, and usually discomfort in one manifestation or another is a sign of that. It's like that's the guideposts along the way of, oh, we need to go here, we need to look here, and we need to allow these places to breathe and see the light of day, to actually feel the light of our awareness, because those are the places we're stuck. And it's as we become intimate with these places, with these stuck places, and it's usually terrain that we already are sure we know, or that we understood. You know, I mean, that's the danger. It's like, oh, I just get anxious when such and such happens. Or, oh, yeah, I just get depressed. Or, you know, whatever it is. Or, oh, I'm just angry. You know, when we really get intimate with those places that we think we already know, that terrain, you know, can suddenly open before us, under us, around us, and inside us. And, you know, this happens in usually surprising ways. And so our perspective shifts, and the world is different. You know, it doesn't take much of a shift for the world to seem different. You know, we can see just doing these service positions as something so contained and safe and something we've done a million times here. What, you know, for 3 years you've done the same thing again and again and again and again, and you've rung the bell, but all of a sudden you're not ringing the bell, you're banging a drum, or you're having to speak, or you're just in a different place in the animal, and it's a completely different universe. It's like, oh, this is happening. Well, anyway, from the perspective of the sky, or from this other perspective of emptiness, all these delusions and habits are, in fact, part of the landscape as well. They're not necessarily what we need to get rid of, but they are simply what we each need to till through our own awareness. And again, some of these things we might just need to see for 3 moments, and it's like, oh, God, I'm doing that. And some things, you know, we may have to keep tilling them for the rest of our life, you know, like the old analogy of the weeds in the garden. You know, we tend to them and we think, okay, I understand now, and so this is practice, and enlightenment are not two. When we empty out the self, we don't erase ourselves, we actually make more room for ourselves. Where do we begin? Where do we end? There really are no definite edges in the spaciousness of this jewel mirror awareness, refracting, breaking apart our stuck perspectives. And I had an interesting experience this spring. I don't know if any of you saw it, but there was that amazing show at the Met of the Indian miniatures. And there was also all of these gems, and they had the Agra diamond, which is a very apparently famous diamond from India, and it's about this big. And I never actually even thought that I particularly liked diamonds. I always sort of didn't get why the diamond was, because they're usually so tacky, you know. But it was kind of like, oh my God, it was just this clear, it was like a star, you know, there was just like the whole universe was radiating out into infinity. There wasn't a single side or place you could land. Everywhere your eye went, it was like light coming out. You went through it, you went in it, you were thrown back out of it. I mean, it was like this magic, powerful, mystical. It was like having the energy of a star in a 1-inch piece of crystal. And our minds are like this. And this is our jewel mirror awareness. You know, I saw, oh, this is where it comes from, because these texts arose from the land of India, where these diamonds really are. You know, it's not because they're expensive. Anyway. So then it goes on, when you can share yourself, then you may manage affairs, and you have the pure seal that stamps the 10,000 forms. Traveling the world, meeting conditions, the self joyfully enters samadhi in all delusions and accepts its function, which is to empty out the self so as not to be full of itself. The empty valley receives the clouds, the cold stream cleanses the moon. And, you know, just to reiterate, I would say that nothing has helped me more in being able to travel different worlds and meet conditions than this ongoing loosening and dropping of my idea of myself, you know, because the self that I have an idea of needs a lot of protection, must not be offended. It has very clear parameters about what it can and can't do, what it will and what it won't do. Believes itself pretty easily scarred, and it's on guard. And this defensive self speaks and hears the voice of the judge, which is just so quick to respond, ready to respond in anger and blame, just in the blink of an eye. And it's just like a taut spring at the ready. And this quality, this judge, is actually the opposite of empty. It is just full of itself. And, you know, it's so full that, you know, we can believe that it's actually the ultimate truth of the universe, that it's the voice of God, you know, that it is reality speaking. And so this voice, as you can imagine, doesn't really leave much room or possibility for sharing. For sharing ourselves. Not so much what we have, but for sharing ourselves. And the affairs it's willing to manage are pretty tight, because there's a lot of parameters, a lot of edges. So we come into the silent cauldron, and the voices quiet. And in the quietness, we listen to them, and we come to know them. And through this knowing, we do forgive them. We forgive our own brokenness, our own need, our own vulnerability, those parts of ourselves that bring us shame. And in this space, it's that very shame that acts as the tenderizer for the tough meat that wrings our hearts. And it's like in this forgiving of ourselves, we can actually begin to really forgive others. The people that shot those arrows, that have harmed us, disrespected us, violated our sense of who we are, who've created the many scars and layers that toughen and actually separate us. So forgiveness gifts us great freedom, as said before, you know, in allowing us to just be, to be who we are. And there is so much relief in this simply being. To be able to be awkward and vulnerable is also to experience our kinship with others. This is actually how we all really connect. Recognizing how wounded we all are, and that, as Tokyu said very poignantly yesterday, you know, we are really in this world, in this life, together, needing each other, and that we are one field. There's a Jesuit priest who I was heard, and I was really very impressed with him. He does a lot of work, primarily with gang members and formerly incarcerated young men in LA. And he really reminded everyone of the power of awe, as he called it, which is really not unlike, in our text, stepping into the circle of wonder. And he suggests that we stand in awe of what others, to stand in awe of what others carry, rather than in judgment of how they carry it. And I just think that's, you know, there it is. And this is not so easy to do, actually, if that someone else seems to be messing us up, even in small ways. But if we can remember this, herein lies freedom. The freedom to forgive and the freedom to have compassion. Not just when it's convenient or easy. And so from here, from, you know, being in an open place, it is our responsibility to do what we can to meet the conditions of the world and to go out and share ourselves, whatever that looks like. You know, as I said before, it's really not enough to just forgive and accept ourselves in our little bubble of wonder. That's very private. In fact, few things are really more obnoxious, or in Zen we might call that really stinky. You know, there's just so much suffering right now in the world, in all the realms, and none of them could use more forgiveness and compassion and awareness than our criminal justice system, which actually should be more aptly called our criminal injustice system. You know, as we, everyone in this room knows, you know, that really all the many manifestations of the severe poverty that exists in this world, in this country, are really kept under wraps, or try to be kept under wraps. But perhaps none more so than the prison system, the criminal justice system. And anyone who's had any kind of experience or introduction to it knows that actually it's really this country's secret shame. It is no better than the Gulag system. And it's no better than many, not much better anyway, than concentration camps that we so easily demonize. And, you know, while there are glimpses of the horror that goes on inside coming to light now, and alongside the glimpses of the criminal justice system is, of course, you know, the glimpses of just the really deep-seated injustices of the racial relations, and those two things are really interpenetrated. And it's just important to remember, as we've heard, that what we're now seeing and hearing is really just the tip of the iceberg. And as it is our responsibility to come to know ourselves, so should we make it our responsibility to become more aware of the ongoing brutality really perpetrated on those most vulnerable and wounded in society as a whole. You know, another part of our body that we might prefer to not look at. But this too is in fact our body, another branch on the one tree. And there's no arena, there's no branch that could not use our attention, from education to mental health to housing to medical access to jobs, communities, etc., and so on. It's endless. I just wanted to briefly mention, because I've had a bit more engagement with this aspect, the criminal justice system. And, you know, here the need for awareness, change, and the capacity to forgive is beyond really even what we can imagine. I mean, the way the incarcerated are treated really should be a criminal offense in and of itself. You know, put all those people in jail who... Well, it's very complicated because, you know, it goes to, well, who are those people, you know? And, you know, ultimately, also, we are those people. So it's, you know, there really never is the other. But it's shocking, the degree of brutality and degradation that happens. And there really virtually is no forgiveness, there is no mercy, and consequently, you know, forgiveness is fertile ground for growth and transformation. And there's very little proportionately transformation or rehabilitation happening right now. We have hundreds of thousands of people who desperately need help in ways that are so stunningly obvious, from education to health care to mental health care to drug treatment to work to opportunity. And, you know, at the base of all this is really basic human kindness, care. People to just go meet them, listen, be present, and from this place, maybe let's see what we should do here. just being brutalized in the most systemic and banal ways. And everyone involved with this system is in some ways victimized by it, including the corrections officers. And so the effects of this reach and ripple out in so many directions, and none of it is good. So I was partly, you know, nudged to bring this up now and to plant a seed for us to remember that at the end of September, there's going to be an upcoming vigil for clemency, which, as you will, is a kind of forgiveness from the state, which will be happening at the end of September, and of which the Village Zendo is going to be one of the sponsors. And two Sangha members, Miyugetsu and Rinsho, have been very active in helping to organize this. And there was one last year, and a few hundred people came. But hopefully this year we can really get that number way up. So it's a candlelight vigil where just people come out, and we go out in buses in front of Governor Cuomo's house, because he is the only person capable in New York State of giving clemency, and he has given fewer clemencies than any governor in recent or even past recent history. And I'm almost. And so it's really, you know, a state forgiveness for those who have proved themselves worthy of it, and of whom there are many. People who have essentially been disappeared from the world with no end in sight from upward of 20, 30, 40 years. And to meet with those people who, through, you know, tremendously deep remorse, self-reflection, and just a lot of hard work, have transformed their hearts and minds to be some of the kindest and wisest people you might ever meet. To see them stuck forever in a hell realm for sometimes for a mistake that, honestly, probably any single one of us in this room, given the same sets of conditions, might well have committed. I mean, I'll just speak for myself here. Is truly heartbreaking. And so, just for so many reasons, ranging from, you know, who better to work with others, particularly youth who are on the edge, for financial reasons, for the greater economy, and again, just for the basic humanistic ones. This is such an important issue. For there to be hope at the other end of this system. So as the act of forgiveness heals and expands us personally, so does the gift of clemency, I think, make us a more whole, wise, and just society. So I just really want to throw out there for everyone to just really consider coming to this vigil, and to just get your friends, people who aren't necessarily interested in this kind of stuff, and just really bring a powerful presence of numbers, that will be quiet. We do a candlelight silent walk and stand in front of the governor's house. And he was disturbed by this. He asked for it to not happen again. With even a few hundred people, he would prefer to have this not reoccur. So, you know, we don't know the effect it could have. So maybe there will be thousands who show up just to be present, sending out a call for mercy and for wisdom. So what appears mammoth and overwhelmingly impenetrable, which this is one system that certainly does appear that way, maybe this too can soften and a little grace can take seed and root in ways we can't imagine right now. The empty valley receives the clouds. The cold stream cleanses the moon. So let's let ourselves be rinsed clean by emptiness, so we can receive the fullness of life. Thank you.